This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman, as always, is your producer. Farron Dogs is the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. HarrisonWallace.com is the website. You know, Farron, it seems like there are so many good numbers out there. Interest rates, we'll get to that in a minute, but the jobs numbers are good. The unemployment is low. If you had one number, though, that you'd want to be better, it's inflation. And that's the one that is vexing all of us right now, isn't it?
It sure is, John. And thanks again for having me today. You know, clearly, like you said, that is the micro focus of everything right now. And I think a lot of that is because everyone is feeling it. And no matter whether you're going to the gas pump or whether you're going on vacation, out to dinner, everyone is feeling it all the way down through. And so it's top of mind, and this is going to be what the Fed is going to be focusing on as well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, we certainly are thrilled that the employment numbers are maintaining the levels that we were kind of surprised about last week. But the Fed is still going to be pretty hawkish if they start to see this inflation number continue to climb.
Well, that would be the number to focus on, right? I mean, that's the cost of goods and services to live, so everything else feels academic compared to that. And yet, gas prices have come down 30 straight days. Are we going to sort of see the needle go the other direction?
I think we might see it. I don't think we'll see it in the June report tomorrow, because the June report is going to capture the big spike in energy and food prices that we saw over the last, 30, 35 days. So I don't think that's going to be captured in this report here. You know, as expected, I think we will see some of the core CPI come down a touch, but I think we may have to wait until next month's CPI to really realize the reduction that we're seeing in some of the gas and energy prices.
How much of a fix will 75 basis points represent?
Well, I don't know. I think the market has priced a lot of that in expectations. So I think anything better than that will definitely be a boost, especially to certain sectors. But I think for the most part, you know, the market is expecting the 75 basis points ever since the employment numbers came out last week. Kind of better than expected. And, you know, it's unfortunate that good news in the economy is bad news in the economy, right? Because it means the Fed's going to tighten money supply. They're going to, raise those interest rates, which basically, can kind of hurt everyone down the road. So except for the fixed income investors, it's good news for them.
Yeah. Well, when's the last time you could say that? But I wonder when do these numbers sort of come to some sort of equilibrium? Like, all right, we'll raise interest rates. Mm-hmm. That's tough for everybody that's got to borrow. That'll slow down business. Who wants to slow down business? But we've got to check inflation. Inflation finally gets checked, and then maybe interest rates come back down. What's the life cycle of those events? How long?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to be well into the end of the fourth quarter, beginning of Q1 next year, before we start to see a true equilibrium with this. I think that what's kind of driving these numbers right now is we're still seeing some pretty strong demand in certain sectors of the market that is unusual. I mean, if you travel anywhere right now, you go out to dinner, there are lines, and there's a lot of people out, and a lot of that is pent up demand from the pandemic, I think. But after the summer, I think we'll start to see that wane a little bit. And I think that will give the Fed a little bit of pause and say, okay, things are slowing down. We're not on fire in terms of consumer spending, travel, and those types of things. And I think that's where we'll start to see some of the employment data change a little bit as well. You know, we saw most of our employment data, more jobs were created in, those services and entertainment industries this last go around, which would make sense for the summer season. But I think as we turn the corner into the fall, we may start to see those pull back, and that will hopefully give the Fed a little bit more pause.
Will a change in auto production have any impact on all of this?
Well, I think you know, once we start to see, and usually that's kind of a leading indicator that things are slowing down, is a slowdown in new purchases of new automobiles. But I do think the chip makers are catching up. So we are actually starting to see, you know, you drive past the dealerships, we're starting to see more cars in the lot. Not all of them are spoken for, which was the case, you know, 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
So I think that is actually even starting to slow there.
I hope so. Farron Doggs is the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. HarrisonWallace.com is the website. Farron, we're out of time. Always good to share some of it with you, though. Thanks for helping us out today.
I appreciate it. Thanks, John. Have a good day.
Everybody's out trying to get you the very best deal on appliances and goods right now. And Apt has jumped back into the fray. Joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch is John Apt, the co-president of Apt Electronics. Hey, John, welcome back.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Pretty good. You guys weren't able to do this the last couple of years, right?
Supply chain has been difficult, to say the least, but things have opened up quite a bit, and at least with most of our manufacturers. We still have some issues here and there, but for the most part, we're seeing a flow of product, and we're seeing some good deals over the next couple of days over these app days that we're having.
So app days in competition with Amazon's version of this. Was that why this day or this sale was created? Because they were cutting into market. If they can do it, we can do it too.
Well, they certainly cause a lot of hoopla over the next couple of days, and there's a lot of people shopping online, and we wanted to take advantage of that. So that's really how it happened.
Oh, so is this online or are these in store specs? Some of them are in store only, right?
It's both, actually. It started as an online thing when we first started doing it, but now it's extended into the store. And yes, there are certain offers that we're having where you've got to either come into the store or you can call over the phone for.
If you're new to Chicagoland, Apt Electronics, listen to this. Here's the wiki on you. Was founded in 1936 when Jewel Apt loaned her husband Dave $800 to open a small electronics store in the Logan Square neighborhood of Chicago. Apt has grown to become the largest independent single-store retailer of electronics, appliances, and home goods in the United States. You're one with three other siblings of co-presidents. 1,500 people work below you in a place that now takes 70 acres. For goodness sakes, John, that's amazing.
Yeah, we've expanded a little bit since our humble beginnings in Logan Square.
Okay, so what am I going to buy? What are you hawking right now? What's the best deals on what stuff here?
What's nice is we've got deals in almost every area. You know, we sell everything for your home. So appliances, small electronics, televisions, vacuums, furniture, fitness equipment. There's deals to be had really in every department of the store.
Okay, I'm reading TVs, Samsung 65-inch black crystal smart TV 4K, 17% off. I don't know what I just said. That's some fancy big TV you got there?
Yeah, we have the savings are anywhere between, they run up to about 30, some even 40% off. Just really depends on exactly what you're looking for. And we cater, we've got stuff from the entry level to the super high end. And like I said before, we've got some good deals going on today.
29% off a Maytag white top load washer with deep fill option. 29% off. Do you like the front load or the top load washing machine?
I like the new front load machines, but I know a lot of people kind of like old school and they want to be able to, you know, add the laundry into the mix while the machine's running. You can't really do that all that well on a front load machine.
What about phones and computers and laptops and tablets? What are you doing there?
It really depends on the brand and the model, but I don't think there's anything going on with cell phones these days. I mean, the general offers that we have, but there's definitely deals within tablets and laptops and all sorts of computer equipment.
You guys do price matching, is that right?
We do. We do it before, during, or after a sale, something that a lot of companies don't do, especially after a sale. You got up to 30 days if you see a price somewhere else after the fact. We're happy to match or beat the price.
Last time I was in your store, I walked in and to the left, you had all of the grills and outdoor cooking kitchens and stuff. Is that where that is still located?
It's still there. We're actually doing, on the weekends, we're doing grill demos as well through most of the summer, where a vendor will come in and they set up out right outside of that area, outside of the building, and they're cooking on the grills and talking about the grills and feeding our customers. So that's kind of a fun thing.
What's the hot feature in that department? I'm kind of interested in that. I think a lot of people are in July. What's hot in that area?
Yeah, the pellet grill has really sort of has grown tremendously over the last couple years. I don't own one, but I've seen them. It's just kind of a different way of cooking, and also those
smokers.
Kamado Joe. We carry a product that does smoking and a whole bunch of other stuff.
What do you mean you don't have one of those things? You're one of the apps. It fell off the truck. It should be in your garage already.
I'm embarrassed to say I'm not a big griller. I have, when we have people over, I have my friends actually grill for me.
Well, I guess that's okay. I mean, you don't have to be all things to all people. I'll bet you've got a pretty good TV or sound system set up. If I went to an apt house, I would expect I would want to look at your washing machine and dryer.
It's funny you say that, because when flat panel TVs came into popularity, people would come over to my house and they'd look on my wall, and they're like, "Where's your flat screen?" I'm like, "No, I just have one of these tube TVs." For years, I mean, people, I took a lot of flack from friends.
Yeah.
Even growing up, when I was a little kid, we didn't have a VCR back in the day. we weren't able to record until probably 5 years after everyone else. So I won't say I'm technologically challenged, but I am kind of late to the game on certain things.
Well, I know the 1,500 people who work for you are pretty good at this. And so what's the calendar on this then? Is App Days on now? When does it go?
We started Monday, and it's going to wrap on Wednesday. And then, we always like to have sort of our everyday low prices. So, you know, if you miss this, there'll certainly be chances to get deals on other things at really any time. But these particular days are going through Wednesday.
App Days today, then, and tomorrow, abt.com, if you're not in the store. John App, nice to talk to you, John. Our best to everybody over there. Congratulations on keeping things running.
All right. Thank you, John.
Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate.com, a frequent guest here on WGN. A lot of folks are talking about problems with the travel industry, and you are too, right, Ted?
Yes, I've experienced much of this firsthand. Our survey found that about 80% of people who've traveled this year experienced some sort of problem. Number one were high prices. No surprise there, 57% identified those. If anything, I'm surprised it's not higher. 29% said they experienced long waits. Soon after that were things like poor customer service and hard-to-find availability. 14% lost money because of canceled or disrupted plans. So a lot going on here in the travel industry.
What was your story?
We had a flight canceled with no explanation the night before. We don't think it was weather. We think it was probably some kind of staffing or equipment shortage. The airline couldn't rebook us for a couple of days. It was only supposed to be a 5-day trip. So after going around and around about, could we do this connection or could we fly out of this different airport, or we tried everything, nothing worked. We ended up having to cancel, but we still wanted to go on the trip. So we rebooked with a different carrier, which cost more money because it was last minute. So it was all a big inconvenience. I guess it had a happy ending, but not without some time and monetary cost.
I know some people who went through versions of that, and if it's at the last minute, then you spend a lot of your vacation time trying to get to your vacation, and it must ruin it for a lot of people when they finally get to wherever it is, right?
Yeah, I know. Silver lining to our situation was that we were home, because, yeah, I was wondering about that. If this had happened on the other end, and then, you know, that just creates a whole other bunch of hassles about you need to find somewhere to stay for a couple extra days or some other way to get home. I actually think that these travel pain points are maybe leading some people to pull back. That plus all the other economic worries about inflation and higher interest rates, and is there going to be a recession and all these things. I mean, I don't mean to put a damper on it. There's reasons we're excited to travel, and we're thankful that the pandemic seems to have gotten better. But yeah, this is sort of the next hurdle for the travel industry. And Adobe says that travel bookings are down a few percentage points, evidence that there may be kind of this summer sugar high, but it may wear off. And then, well, what happens in the fall and winter? The other thing is that even though travel has been a lot more robust this summer than the last two, it's still down double digits from 2019, according to the TSA passenger screening data. So that makes me think a lot of this is kind of self-inflicted, that the airlines just cut so much and now they can't handle this capacity.
Well, sure, they incentivized a lot of employees to take early retirement, and it seems like now, particularly in the case of pilots, they just don't have people to fly the planes.
And that's going to be a tough one to solve, because that obviously requires a lot of training. The training can be expensive and time-consuming, and you can't just snap your fingers and have a whole bunch more pilots. So, yeah, I think that some of these shortages may be with us a while. Business travel has not fully bounced back. So this is largely a leisure travel story. So it may be very cyclical, that the summer is pretty robust. I think the fall may represent a dip. I think the holidays, a lot of people will be flying once again. But maybe the industry can kind of catch its breath a little bit in the fall. We'll have to see.
Well, do I remember correctly, didn't we give a lot of money to the airlines with the expectation that they would continue to operate and that they didn't suffer the financial losses that other industries did? So I do think they owe it to us to get their house in order.
It's something that the White House has been talking about. Like, are there things that they can do, whether it's fines or some other carrot or stick kind of method? Because, yeah, it is pretty messy right now, and I think it is definitely an obstacle for people. People are willing to spend. That's evidence of the pent-up demand. 52% say they're willing to spend more than usual to travel this year. Only 15% said less. That leaves about a third spending the same. So I think right now the biggest hurdle for people is just getting from point A to point B. That's what they're most upset about when it doesn't go their way.
Bankrate.com says 8 in 10 travelers have experienced travel problems this year, but travel problems include waits, say in lines, or high costs to travel, and those would be complaints on any given year. I wonder how much of an uptick this represents.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have specific apples-to-apples data year over year. Anecdotally, I would tell you it seems like it's up. I've also seen data suggesting that about a quarter of flights were late in June and about 3% were canceled. So we are hearing a lot of people getting stranded or having to rebook. That said, though, I've been hearing that all these popular domestic leisure hotspots are crowded. Like, people are packing into Disney World and Disneyland and beaches all over the country. And that's another tip for people. Like, if you're looking to travel somewhere, maybe consider letting the deal dictate when and where you go, to the extent that you can be flexible. Because if you just pick a place like, oh, I want to go to Disney during school break, it's probably going to be really crowded and expensive. So maybe try to zig when others zag. Also, maybe try to cash in those credit card rewards or airline miles or hotel points. That can also defray some of these costs.
Boy, it does seem to be a common element, mixed messaging. For instance, in about the economy in general, we hear, oh, the numbers are bad. Oh, the numbers are actually pretty good. Or in the case of travel, nobody wants to travel. It's terrible out there. Why? Well, because it's too crowded. I mean, Yogi Berra could have written that line. You know, the rest, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. That seems to, look at what happened at Heathrow. They've had to limit the number of passengers they have going through that airport. And that's a staffing issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that Yogi Berra quote, and I think it does apply to this travel situation. I think it underscores how some destinations are jam-packed, and then other ones have not totally recovered. So that's another idea. Maybe there's a place that is more business-friendly, like New York City comes to mind. Of course, there's a lot of touristy things to do in New York, but business travel has not rebounded. So you actually might be able to find some flight or hotel deals, or at least more availability, maybe less crowds on Broadway and things like that. International's been a little slower to recover as well. And some of this is seasonal too, but like to go to the Caribbean this summer or Mexico, it's a little bit of their off season because it's hot and it's hurricane season, but there's actually some deals there. The euro is really low relative to the dollar, so it's actually a favorable time to go over there. So there are some bargains if you look a little further afield.
Parity with the euro now, which never happens. It's 12:44. I'm planning a vacation myself right now, and I'm going to go to Chicago. If you want good value and not long lines, Chicago is a, I'm not kidding now. For those of you in the sound of this voice in the Midwest, you want to get away, come to Chicago. And Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate.com. Ted, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your help today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
The Wintrust Business Lunch continues now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Credit concerns for the company selected to build Chicago's casino. Crane's reports rating agencies Fitch and S&P have revised the outlook on Bally's debt from stable to negative. That's not a downgrade, but could mean one is coming in the future. It also raises new questions about whether Bally's will be able to complete the casino project on time. According to S&P, the company faces development risks during the construction period, including securing the necessary permits, building in an urban area, and inflationary pressures on labor and materials costs. A Cook County judge has issued a foreclosure judgment against the owner of Chicago's second-largest hotel, the Palmer House Hilton. New York-based Thor Equities defaulted on its $333 million mortgage. Lender Wells Fargo filed the foreclosure case nearly 2 years ago. The judgment means there could be an auction sale of the 1,635-room property at 17 East Monroe, and it could be sold off for just a fraction of its pre-pandemic value. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, and we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. I was looking through the obituaries a while back and came across the name of Don Breed. And to most of us, that name doesn't ring a bell. But if you're a Northwest Sider, especially around Portage Park and Jefferson Park, you probably know who Don was, as much for the fish he sold at Higgins Fish Market as for what he did for the community.
Yeah, so this gentleman apparently had lost his business and was out of work, and my dad fed him and took care of him. I had never heard that story. My mom hadn't. But it just is a beautiful example of what my father was like and how much he loved the people in this community.
That's Don's daughter, Tammy Jess, who is part of the third generation of the family running Higgins Fish Market on Montrose. Her dad married into the business, and he and Charlene were partners for 55 years. But before there was a retail store, there were two generations of Great Lakes fishermen.
My grandfather, along with his father and his brothers, started as commercial fishermen up in Door County.
Tammy says her grandfather and great uncle decided to move to Chicago to try selling fish to the public, and they chose a spot on Montrose near Central.
Everyone thought they were crazy because at the time there was one house on the block and it was Fields otherwise.
In the early 70s, Don's father-in-law invited him into the business.
He had a business degree, and my mom's dad came to him and said, "Don, we think you could really help us expand the business portion of our store."
And Higgins became one of the first retailers to import fish.
My dad said, "Let's bring in some variety." Brought in fish from the coasts, from around the world.
Business had been going great for decades when Don received a blow. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And that's almost always a get your affairs in order diagnosis.
Yeah, he was given a 2% chance of living 1 year.
And the cancer finally got him 19 years after his diagnosis at the age of 77.
Just a miracle. They don't know. They don't know how he did it.
And as the family continues to run Higgins after Don Breed's death, he is missed.
He was a great guy, and it showed in his work ethic and his dedication to quality.
That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Philip Weiss, the president of SciFarth at Work. Your focus today, Philip, is on sexual harassment and training, how to spot it, what to do about it, right?
Absolutely. And really, it should be the focus, John, of employers throughout the city because of a new law that just came into force last week as of July 1st. Every employer, even if you've got one employee all the way up to the big companies, now have to train everybody on sexual harassment in the city of Chicago, anybody employed by the companies, as well as part-time employees as well. And what's interesting, John, it's one of the most expansive laws of its kind, meaning for managers, it requires a total of 3 hours of training per year. For employees, 2 hours of training, and you got to cover not just sort of what constitutes this inappropriate conduct, but what it means to be a bystander, meaning why people should not stand by and watch it happen in the workplace and what they can do to step up and make a difference.
So you said law. Are you, you're speaking about a city of Chicago ordinance, right?
That's right. It's a city ordinance, and it's administered and enforced by the Chicago Commission on Human Relations. So they're the ones that are going to be looking into it. If an employee becomes aware that their boss has not trained within the year, and they'll be following up, whether it's investigations or fines. And what's really interesting about that question, John, is there are fines if you don't train. They're not enormously expensive, but you could be paying $1,000 a day if you haven't trained within the year for every day you don't train. But then beyond that, if the failure to train is a reason why you experienced a hostile environment, there's all kinds of other liability risks that result from that, with bigger fines and bigger lawsuits right behind that failure. So this is a good thing to do for a range of moral and legal reasons.
How do companies accomplish this? Is it these videos we all have to watch and then click on the little questionnaires afterwards?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And the city has tried to make the answer fairly easy. And what they've done is they've put on the Chicago Commission on Human Relations website all kinds of templates, policies that you need to adopt, posters you need to mount, and to your question, John, sample template training materials. But the trick here is that companies have found in other states and cities with similar rules and similar templates that if you just print out the pages and read out the content to your employees, you might not be doing yourself the kind of good you would expect, meaning you might meet the check-the-box requirement to cover the content. But if your employees aren't really listening, if they're not really evaluating, engaging, then at the end of the day, you may end up with a lawsuit where a plaintiff lawyer interviews your own employees and managers in depositions, and they can recall nothing about what they learned. So you got to be thinking, let me use these materials as kind of almost an audit list, but let me make the training truly high impact, truly memorable.
Well, there's the nut, isn't it? Because I think a lot of these programs feel like CYA from the employer, and is the employee just sprinting through the quiz so they can get on to what they have to do? I don't know what really would constitute effective training on a variety of fronts. Cyber training, sexual harassment training, legal training. I think it's very hard for businesses to get their employees to engage on this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you have kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of the challenge many companies face, and frankly, most training providers candidly fail to help them effectively. So what does powerful training really look like? For one thing, especially with more people working in person again, in-person training, assuming it's COVID safe, is a huge plus. Secondly, we have found and our clients have told us that if you can actually have enough short examples of misconduct, of good conduct that is relevant to your industry and workplace, and it's your own employees and managers who have to come to a conclusion together on when something might cross a line or how they might respond in the moment, they are far more likely and willing to do the right thing when something comes up that's similar a year, a month, or a day later. So having highly targeted examples, a lot of interactivity, and a real consensus building where people come together, then they'll buy in on the right decisions, and they'll frankly understand it's in their interest. It's not just the rule coming down from upon high.
Philip Weiss, the president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth, SeyFarth@work.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks for having me, John.